Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stassi Okalski.
Today is Monday, February 20th, and our theme today is story endings. They don't always live happily ever after. Good morning, Stash. Well,
good morning, Fanny, but there are a lot of happy school children around the country today.
Yeah, most schools are closed, I understand.
To celebrate all the wonderful presidents that we've had in this country. And those three men did a great job.
Well, there's somebody celebrating every one of them, you can be sure.
Right, right.
I wanted to thank Andy Offit Irwin for opening our show this morning with his composition, Tarry Here. And I happen to know, have secret information, that Andy will be at Stories in the Round at the end of June, June 26th, and he's going to do a workshop for us. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Wow.
Yeah. But do you want to talk about Speak?
Well, yeah. Last week we had Priscilla Howe, and she did a great job.
For the opening. Grand opening.
Yes. And she did it for our 11th season at the Shepherdstown Opera House. And she did a story that went on for an hour and 35 minutes. And it is a classic, Tristan and Isolde. And I just thought it was a wonderful performance. And then on Wednesday night in the Opera House, she did another performance, but they were of Bulgarian folk tales and jokes. And I enjoyed both performances very much. They were incredibly different and fun. On Wednesday morning, I was able to escort Priscilla to the Morgan Academy in Shepherdstown. And she did two shows there, the younger children and then the little bit older children. It was hard to tell because they have pods instead of like classes like first, second, third, fourth grade. The kids are divided into pods and you belong in a pod depending on, I read their brochure. It depends on how much you know, how much you need to know, and like your developmental place. So just because you're 5 years old doesn't mean you'll be with all 5 year olds. You know, you might be with a 7 year old, you might be with a 4 year old. Anyway, that's the way I understood it. And the kids were really well behaved. And it was great. You know, I liked taking the storyteller to their show when they perform in the schools. And Speak sets that up. The schools pay nothing. It's a gift to the local schools, and we don't always go to the same school. And for me, it's wonderful because I get to see the professional storyteller in their adult performance, and then I get to see them in school. And I always hear great stories and learn stuff. Priscilla had her puppets with her, and it almost inspired me to get my puppet down from the top shelf and practice with them. But
it didn't inspire you to do that?
It did. I went over to the shelf and stood next to it, and I rubbed his head and told him that I'm thinking about him and that we'll probably get together soon.
Okay. You made a ring date.
Sort of, yeah. And he's up on top of that shelf, so every time I walk through the room, I get to see him. That way I won't forget about him.
Very good.
Yeah, so.
Okay, well, on our, is that, oh, you were going to tell us about next month.
Next month, 3 weeks from tomorrow, Connie Reagan Blake on March 14th and 15th. And I know that one of her performances in person at the Opera House, I believe it'll be the 14th, March 14th, will be about Ray Hicks. Ray Hicks, who was considered a national treasure, received one of the highest awards ever given by our country to a person who has performed in special ways for a particular kind of thing. And he is a real down-home storyteller. I have a couple of recordings of Ray Hicks, and I've listened to them. And I also have a book that goes with it and has the words printed the way he says them. And it's much easier to listen than to read it because you have to adjust your brain. So, and anyway, his stories are phenomenal. And he's a real country storyteller. I mean, he uses language that is just embedded deep in the cultures of Appalachia and the mountain people. So I'm looking forward to her because she became a very good friend to their family and took care of their family for many years. When he became ill and passed away, she helped the family out a lot. And also when his wife died, she was there with him. So that's going to be a real empowering program. I don't know what she's going to do on Wednesday night. We haven't been told that yet. So, but I do know that I am going to get to take her to Shepherdstown Middle School. And I'll get to hear more stories.
Excellent.
So,
looking forward to that myself.
Good. That's good. She's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good.
Yeah, she's very good. Go ahead.
Did you mention speakstoryseries.com?
You just did.
Okay.
Speakstoryseries.com is where you can get all the information about tickets, about times. 7:30 in the evening is when our programs begin. And also, there are possibilities for donations.
Mm-hmm.
Some people will donate. In fact, the people at the school on last week, one of the administrators, I think she was, cornered me before we were leaving and said, how do I go about giving a donation to your storytelling program? And it was wonderful. So I gave her my personal name and address. No, I didn't. I gave her the information and she said she would contact Dad. So
the other thing that's on the website, though, at speakstoryseries.com is the entire roster for the rest of the year.
Right. And if somebody wants to read that and maybe memorize it or something, more power to them. On the radio, I'm just going to
put it on their calendar. I just did that last time.
Oh, that's good. We have something in common. I did the same thing on my calendar.
All right.
But I only put first names. Because that gives me something to practice with my mental acuity. In 3 months, I'll look at the second Tuesday and wonder, why is that? What's that name? Who is Bob? Or, you know, and then it'll dawn on me before the end of the day.
Glad to hear that. Do you want to start with a story?
I think I will. And I want to start with one that actually we both have heard a version of this by a friend of ours that we had performed with. But I just like these short stories that are have some kind of ending that is kind of neat, different. Okay, so, and this is something that I heard at Jonesboro, one of the first times I went there. The Walking Catfish by Doc McConnell. I know you know this story. I think you know this story.
Not by that title.
No, okay. Well, here we go. I was raised over there at Stony Point. close to Tucker's Knob. Seemed like all I ever done was hoe corn or fish. And I fished as much as I could. One day I was down there at John Malk's old mill pond fishing, and I was catching catfish. I was catching them fish as fast as I could, pulling them out one right after the other. I was throwing them over there on the bank behind me. After a while, they quit biting, and I commenced on stringing them up. All of them had done died and got stiff lying there in the hot sun, except one old catfish. He was laying there in the grass, going just like, whoosh, 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 still breathing. Well, I just hung him on my stringing line and went on to the house. I started to clean them fish, but I tossed the old fish that was still breathing over on the grass. Next morning, that old fish was still living. You know, I struck up an idea. I just thought, I'd start training that old fish. I fixed him up in a bucket of water, took him out of the water about 2 hours the first day, about 3 hours the second day, and about 4 hours the next day. And I kept on working with him and working with him until I left him out all morning. I finally left him out all day long. It wasn't long before that fish had learned to stay out of the water completely and never went near the water at all. That old fish was the finest pet a boy ever had. I named him Homer. I put a little string around him and led him around like a little old dog and taught him to follow me. He just wiggled through the gravel and dirt and followed me everywhere I went. Never did I go anywhere unless old Homer would go with me. Homer followed me everywhere. I kept old Homer around all summer long until school took up in the fall, and then I left the house for school each morning. Old Homer followed me right on down the road, just wagging and wagging in the dirt. I would throw rocks at him to try to get him to go back to the house, but he wouldn't. One day, as I was walking to school, I kept looking over my shoulder, and he was still wiggling there in the dirt, following me down the road. Well, I got almost to the schoolhouse, and as I crossed a little wooden bridge over a little creek, I looked back, and old Homer was nowhere in sight. I couldn't see him nowhere. I went back there and begun looking all around that bridge. There was a board that had broken and rotted and fell off that bridge. I looked down there through that hole, and there old Homer lay at the edge of the water. He had drowned. You've heard that before.
I heard Larry Hayes tell a story about catfish, but I don't remember that ending.
No, it was his ending was different, but it's similar.
Okay.
About training, you know, training them. It's got the basic threads. I just think I like Doc McConnell. I know you've been to Jonesboro a number of times, so you must.
Yeah, but I never heard Doc. I never heard Doc McDonald. I've been five times, but I never heard Doc McDonald.
Oh well, he's gone now. So and. But I don't know, the first time I ever went there, I met him one time when I was just on a trip and decided to cut off the highway and go into Jonesboro because I'd never been there for a festival, but I'd heard about it. And I met him in, this was before they had the International Storytelling Center, but in a building very close to that place. And I met him, and he and I got along real well. He stood with me for about 15 minutes and told me stories and jokes, and I just was thrilled to meet him. I didn't even know his name until we shook hands and I was leaving. But he did a show next to his kind of like, not a Conestoga wagon, but one of those wagons that you travel out west in, and it was like an old-time medicine show. And I just was thrilled every time I could go to Jonesboro and he was going to be performing. He would be performing in front of the swapping place where you would sign up, not the swapping ground itself, but the little kind of like cabin that they had where you signed up for different things.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. I just loved his stories. Just very funny. So are you going to tell a story?
I am. Are you ready? Well, we should say tell our listeners that they're listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org and we're community radio, and that they can listen to 5 years of stories from us at talltales.enlightenedradio.org. I think this story might be one of my favorite Brer Rabbit stories. It's called Who Ate the Butter? Fox had a big plantation, and the rest of the animals are all working for him. Fox had them all chopping weeds out of the cornfield. Soon Rabbit gets tired, wants to fool around, so he starts thinking of an excuse to get away. But Fox had Bear overseeing for him, and Bear was pretty tough on Rabbit because he knew Rabbit was shiftless, just lollygag around, do nothing all day. Pretty soon, Rabbit calls Bear over, tells him he's going to have to take about an hour off. Bear wants to know, what for? Rabbit says, his wife is about to have a baby and needs his help. Bear says, okay. And Rabbit skedaddles real fast. Then he looks around for some mischief to get into, and he has an idea. He's all tired and hungry. He knows that Fox has gone into the city, so Rabbit decides to go over to Fox's house. He looks in the icebox, finds him some fried chicken and fruit, and eats it up. Then he skips out into the shrubbery and rests till he notices the hour is about up. When Rabbit gets back to the field, everyone wants to know what he named the baby. The first thing comes into Rabbit's mind is all the food in the icebox, which he wants to get back to. So he said, number one gone. Rabbit begins to work again, but the more he works, the more he's thinking about that food still in the icebox and how he can get back to it. Well, rabbits have more than one baby at a time. So he calls a bear back and tells him, it's about time, Mr. Bear. Time for what? Asks Bear. Time for my wife to have another baby, says Rabbit. So Bear let him go again, and Rabbit made a beeline for the icebox. He started on some ham, didn't stop till they were all gone. When Rabbit gets back to the field, the others want to know what he named the second baby. Rabbit tells him, number two gone. Then Rabbit starts working again, while everyone else is scratching their heads, wondering why he gave his baby such odd names. After about an hour, Rabbit calls Bear over again with the same excuse, and then makes another beeline for Fox's icebox. This time, he eats up all the beef. He can only eat so much at one time, you know. And when he gets back, he tells everyone this baby's name is Half Gone. After working maybe a half hour, Rabbit says he has to take another leave of absence. He hurries over to Fox's icebox, drinks up all the juice and milk he can hold, goes back to the field. What's this one's name? They want to know. 3/4 gone, says Rabbit. Rabbit works a little bit longer, and then he says he has to go again. And this time he drinks up all the cream and eats all the cheese and butter. And when he gets back to the field, he tells everyone, well, that's the last baby, and I named him All Gone. Late in the afternoon, Fox comes back from town, driving his big Cadillac out to the field. What's been going on while I was gone? He says, someone ate up all my food. Well, everyone's been here all day except for Brother Rabbit, said Bear. I really don't think he had time to do it because he's been helping his wife have her babies. Well, when everyone gets in camp tonight, I'll find out who done it, said Fox. That night, Fox ranged for a big barbecue. After working hard all day and then sleeping hard all day and then eating so much barbecue, everyone's just exhausted and they go right to sleep. While they sleep, fox builds a great big fire. He knows the heat from that fire will make the butter run out of whoever ate it. But Fox was drowsy too, and while he was sitting up waiting to see who the butter was coming out of, he fell asleep. For some reason, Rabbit woke up and saw a pool of butter all around himself, and he knew what Fox was up to. He rubbed the butter all over Bear and then tiptoed down to the pond and washed himself off. Not a speck of butter left on him. When he got back to camp, everybody was sound asleep and the fire still going. Well, soon Rabbit's fur was all fluffy and dry. Rabbit picked up a little pebble, threw it at Fox to wake him up, and then lay down and pretended he was asleep. Fox wakes up, decides it's time to examine everyone while they're still asleep. Since Rabbit was the only one that left the field that day, he thought he should check him first. But Rabbit was all dry. Bear's the biggest, best able to eat 2 pounds of butter, thought Fox. I'll check him next. Sure enough, Bear was covered in butter. Rabbit was watching everything. He knew Fox was headed to the house to get his shotgun. He lay real quiet, just watching. When Fox was almost back within shooting distance of Bear, Rabbit shakes Bear up, tells him Fox is going to shoot him for eating up all his food. Bear is all surprised and confused and wants to argue about it. But Rabbit tells him, "You better run." "I don't have anything to run for," said Bear. "You just wait a minute more, you'll have something to run for," said Rabbit. And just then, Fox sees Rabbit standing up and figures he's trying to get away. "Let's both barrels loose." "Well, Brother Bear, I guess you got something to run for now," says Brother Rabbit. Bear cut out through the thicket while Fox was reloading, and the two of them went running, Bear with Fox shooting at him. Rabbit tells Fox he'll help catch Bear, but instead he runs off and hides. After a while, Fox loses sight of Bear and gives up the chase. Pretty soon, Rabbit catches up with Bear, says, "I told you so. I told you Fox was going to kill you for eating up all his food." "But Brother Rabbit, I swear I didn't do it." "Don't make no difference," said Rabbit. "He's going to kill you anyway, because you know you'll never change his mind." Bear was so upset. "What should I do?" he asked Rabbit. "Well, if I was you, I'd go to some other part of the woods," advised Rabbit, "because you definitely can't live around here no more." That's what Bear did. Rabbit couldn't have been more pleased with itself. He skipped back to Fox's house. Fox was sitting on the front porch with his shotgun across his lap, just in case Bear come back and tried to soft talk him. But Rabbit told Fox he didn't have anything to worry about anymore. "How come?" said Fox. "Because I chased Bear into some quicksand," said Rabbit. Fox was so grateful, he made Rabbit his new foreman, and no one ever heard from Bear again. He didn't live happily ever after.
Yikes. I never heard that one before.
I've told that one before. I like it.
Man. So the fox killed the bear.
No.
Chased him away. Well, he just chased him away.
Rabbit gave him bad advice.
And sent them off.
Yeah.
Send him off. Oh my goodness. I'll be darned. Well, that's a new one on me.
Butter was a big deal in my household.
Butter. Yeah. Butter,
yes. We had a lot of butter stories.
Huh. We had a lot of margarine. Yeah. Well, All right. So I guess we should just go on.
All right.
Okay. Well, I have a story here called the Two Sons. All right. And this was performed at the National Storytelling Festival by Alice McGill. And there's a little introduction to this. Alice McGill wrote, "I first heard about the bogeyman, she said, "when I was a little girl. My father used him often to make me and my sisters and brothers behave. If you don't go get in that bed and go to sleep, that bogeyman's going to get you." I never could imagine what he looked like. And that faceless bogeyman lay hidden in my imagination, and I called him up for this story called The Two Sons. Once, in a little community near Dismal Swamp, there lived a pretty young woman who had two little boys to raise by herself. Her husband had sickened and died during the big war. He had fought bravely and in many battles too, but somehow or another, a terrible sickness came over him and he was sent home from over the seas to die. Just before death claimed him, he called his sons to his bedside. His dear wife held his hand as he instructed each son in kind. "Mind your mom, mind your manners, work hard, pay respect to all old folks. Don't ever sass your mama. Stay away from the swamp, no matter what happens to me. If you listen to what I have told you, you will never have to worry about..." The poor man died before he could utter his last words. Oh, what a pitiful sight he made. The grieving widow did the best she could to comfort her two sons. After the burial, friends and neighbors brought comfort to the small family by way of fine food and lively talk. Just at sunset, the friends and neighbors departed to their homes through the woods and around the swamp. Then the two sons helped their mother. One lit the oil lamp and the other kindled a fire in the wood stove to chase off the cool of the evening. Their mother seemed to be at peace, and she was smiling as the three of them chatted around the fire. At last, one of them ventured to ask his mother if she knew what their father's last words might have been, if he had been able to say them before he passed on. The woman paced the floor as she answered, "Oh, my sons, just do as your father said. Mind your manners, work hard, pay respect to all old folks. Don't ever sass me, your mama. Stay away from the swamp, and you will never have to worry." But worry and grief beat in her chest. She did not tell them that their father's meager pension would not pay for the cost of keeping the house, let alone put food on the table and clothes on their backs. Before long, she found a job weaving large reed baskets for a storekeeper. The sons thought about their father's last words many nights after their mother had fallen into exhausted sleep. Over and over, they repeated the last sentence to each other. They filled in the missing words from their deepest thoughts. "You will never have to worry about paying bills. You will never have to worry about finding a job, making a fortune, ruling the world." They could not think of words that they thought were suitable to come out of their father's mouth. Some years passed, and as the sons grew taller and stronger, the memory of their father grew dimmer and dimmer. Finally, they could not remember his face at all, and his last words to them left their restless minds. Their mother, however, worked hard to keep food on the table. Time after time, she reminded her sons to feed the chickens, water the garden, and keep the yard clean. Dutifully, the sons obeyed for a while. One summer day, while they were sprinkling the garden, an old man appeared at the garden gate. "How about giving me two of them cucumbers?" he begged. "I'm so hungry, I could eat them right off the vine." The sons screamed one after the other, "Why don't you plant your own garden?" One son sprinkled the old man so that he hobbled off dripping wet. The other son threw his watering can. The can bounced off the old man's back as he whimpered away in pain. Those two men laughed. Just before sundown, their mother returned from basket weaving. Thinking she would be pleased, the sons eagerly told her what they had done to protect the family garden. She was not pleased. Shame on you for treating a poor old man so. We have gracious plenty in our garden. Why didn't you give him 2 cucumbers? He didn't have no rights on our cucumbers, one of the sons screamed at his mother. If you think I'm going to give away good food to any old beggar, you must be silly. I'm tired of watering this old garden anyhow. Well, that didn't please the mom very much. The other son bragged, glad I hit him with my can. I'll hit him again if you want to, and you can't stop me. Her mother was so shocked over the change in her son that she could barely speak. Go in the house, she muttered. I'll talk to you in a little while. She turned and walked toward the china berry tree. The two sons stormed through the front door, thinking that she was going to switch them. Then they eased through the back door and ran to the swamp to hide among the marsh weeds. The muddy green water sloshed against their knees as they stumbled about trying to find solid ground. When at last they thought they were safe, their feet began to sink into quicksand. The more they struggled, the deeper they sank, until a rope was thrown around the upper part of their bodies. They felt themselves being pulled out of the mire and along the rough ground. The holder of the other end of the rope was hidden in the darkness, but they heard a deep, gruff voice grow louder and louder as the tug of the rope pulled them nearer and nearer. The voice was saying, mind your manners, work hard, pay respect to all old folks. Don't ever sass your mama. Stay away from the swamp, and you will never have to worry about the bogeyman. The two sons were never heard of or seen again.
Wow.
They didn't live happily ever after either.
And all for a cucumber.
Yep. I like that story. When I first came across that story, I was shocked at the ending because I thought it was their mother going to be pulling them out or, you know, somebody. Neighbor, but not the bogeyman. The bogeyman was a big deal in my life.
In that little room at the top of the stairs?
You bet. My bedroom was not the happy, safe place that I would have liked.
Well, no, not if you had a bogeyman.
No, because I could hear footsteps on the steps that led from the second floor to the third floor where my door was. And I could hear those steps creaking and creaking. And nobody ever believed me when I said, somebody keeps coming up those steps.
Do you think it was Tony?
Oh, no. No. At first, I thought it might be Tony, but Tony was much, much more creative than just to use the steps. Tony had great creativity. Once my brother, when I was about 11, maybe 10 or 11, my brother just somehow went upstairs to bed before me. That almost never happened. But his door was closed. He had a separate bedroom. You had to go through my bedroom to get to his. And I went up, no light in his room, so I didn't say anything. I just got in bed, and I laid there. And when I was younger, my way of going to sleep was laying flat on my back with my arms crossed my chest and not moving, period, because I didn't want to attract anybody's attention who might be in that room. Well, my brother Tony was under the bed. And he waited and waited. He told me later, a couple years later, that he figured it was about a good 15 minutes after I'd settled in bed. And he was laying under the bed on the cold floor because we didn't have carpeting or rugs. But he was there and he took his time and slid his hand between the blanket and the mattress on the side of the bed. And worked his hand up little at a time. He knew how still I laid. So it took him a long time to get that hand up close enough to where all of a sudden he shoved his hand in and grabbed me my side. And I screamed and passed out. And my brother had to go get my father.
Oh, my.
He thought I died. And when my dad came into our bedroom, that was a terrible sight because my dad was in his underwear and he's a big man. My first thought was, that's the bogeyman. But soon enough, he turned on the light, and sat down on the bed, put his hand on my head and rubbed my hair and said, everything's okay. You're fine. Your brother was just playing the joke and we'll fix him tomorrow. And then he tucked me in a little bit. And my brother said, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And he went to bed. And I was kind of hoping he'd get the belt for that, but he didn't. My father didn't use his belt on us.
What did he get?
Oh, he got to talk to my mother about how he shouldn't be treating his little brother because my father went to work. Mom had what we called deszczepina in Polish. That's a cat of nine tails. Nine pieces of leather nailed to a foot-long stick. And it was kind of from the old pirate days. They used the old pirates used that. That's from a story I was told. And Tony got a few smacks with that cat of nine tails.
Whoa.
Yeah. My mother was a strict disciplinarian.
And, oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, I'm going to lighten the mood a bit. Quite the stories. But I still think it might have been Tony torturing you, coming up those steps over and over again.
Yeah, might have been.
Because it was that's pretty creative if he knew how terrified you were. I mean, you kept talking about the people, the strangers or whoever it was you thought.
Yeah.
Bogeyman was coming up.
Right.
Okay, this is another Br'er Rabbit story. One time, food got very scarce. The rice crop was poor. Fish were swimming too low to catch, and birds flying too high to shoot. It was really very hard times, and all the animals were mighty hungry. Br'er Rabbit, Br'er Wolf put their heads together to figure out what to do. After a while, Br'er Rabbit, weeping bitter tears, said the only thing left to do was to eat their grandmamas. Br'er Wolf just wailed and wailed. Br'er Rabbit said, if you're going to take it so hard, Br'er Wolf, it'd be better for you to kill your grandmama first and get it over with. That way you'll be done with your grieving faster. So Br'er Wolf dried his eyes and killed his grandmama. Then he and Rabbit went off and they ate and ate day and night until the food all gone. Well, soon after, Br'er Wolf went visiting Br'er Rabbit and said, Br'er Rabbit, I am hungry through and through. It's time to kill your grandmama now so we can have something to eat. Br'er Rabbit threw back his head and burst out laughing. You think I'm going to kill my own grandmama? Said, oh, no, Br'er Wolf, I could never do that. This made Br'er Wolf so mad. He tore at his hair with his claws and he howled and howled. He said he's going to make Br'er Rabbit kill his grandmama somehow. That night, Br'er Rabbit took his grandmama by the hand and led her way off into the woods. He hid her at the top of a huge coconut tree, told her to stay there, quiet. Then he gave her a little basket with a cord tied to it so that he could send food up to her. The next morning, Br'er Rabbit went to the foot of the tree and hollered in a fine voice, Granny, Granny, oh, Granny, let the basket down. When the grandma heard this, she let down the basket with the cord, and Br'er Rabbit filled it with things to eat. Every day he came back and did the same thing, and every day she let down the basket. Br'er Wolf watched and listened. He crept up close. By and by, he heard what Br'er Rabbit was saying. He saw the basket swing down on the cord and go back up again. And when Br'er Rabbit left, Br'er Wolf sneaked up at the foot of the tree and said, "Granny, Granny, oh, Granny, let down the basket." Old Granny Rabbit listened close. She said to herself, "What's happening here? My grandson doesn't talk like that." When Br'er Rabbit came back to see his grandmama, she told him about how someone was hollering, "Let down the basket." Br'er Rabbit just laughed till he couldn't laugh anymore. When Br'er Rabbit went away, Br'er Wolf come back to the tree and hollered, "Granny, Granny, oh Granny, let down the basket." Granny Rabbit held her head to one side and listened hard. "I'm sorry, my son, you have such a bad cold. Your voice is sounding very hoarse." And then she peeked through the branches and saw Br'er Wolf. "You can't fool me," she said. "Go away, you hear?" Br'er Wolf snorted and gnashed his teeth and stomped off into the swamp to think about his problem. By and by, he went to the blacksmith and asked him how he could make his voice less hoarse-sounding so that it sounded fine like Br'er Rabbit. Blacksmith said, "Oh, I can run this hot poker down your throat, and then you'll be able to talk nice and easy like Br'er Rabbit." Well, it hurt real bad, and it was a long time before Br'er Wolf could talk at all. But he finally got back to that coconut tree, and when he got there, he hollered, "Granny, Granny, oh Granny, let down the basket." That voice sounded so nice and fine to Granny Rabbit, she was sure it was Br'er Rabbit. She let down the basket, and Br'er Wolf climbed in. Then Granny Rabbit started to pull on the cord. "Lord, this load is heavy. My grandson must be sending me an awful lot of food this time." Br'er Wolf couldn't help grin when he heard her say that, but he kept real still. Granny Rabbit pulled hard. She pulled and pulled till she got so tired she had to rest, leaving Br'er Wolf hanging, dangling, way up high in the air. Br'er Wolf was so high up, when he looked down, he got dizzy. When he looked up, though, his mouth started to water. Then he looked down again, and he saw Br'er Rabbit. Well, that scared Br'er Wolf. He jerked on the rope a little. Br'er Rabbit got to the bottom of the coconut tree and hollered, "Granny, Granny, oh, Granny, let down the basket." Granny Rabbit cut the cord on the basket, and Br'er Wolf fell to the ground and never bothered anyone else again. Now we know Granny and Br'er Rabbit lived long and happy lives, but we don't know nothing about that Br'er Wolf. You know, they can't all live happily ever after.
Oh, that's good.
I need to work on the voices. I don't have those voices down.
Yeah. Well, I like that one. That was good. I thought Granny was going to kill Br'er Rabbit by dropping a wolf on him.
Now, there's an alternate ending.
There you go. Would you do an announcement to tell our folks who they've been listening to? Please.
You've been listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Stassi Olkowski.
And our theme today is, was, and will be story endings. They all can't live happily ever after.
All right. And I have another story. And this one, I searched around for this one because I knew something about it. I was looking for a story that was told by the guest coming up for the next Speak Story series, Connie Reagan Blake. But I wanted to find a story that she had done with her cousin, Barbara Freeman and Connie Reagan Blake for quite a few years. Were tandem tellers.
Mm-hmm, and, right.
And they had traveled the country doing that. Well, they stopped doing tandem telling a long time ago because they've both been doing stories for 50 years at least. Anyway, this is a story that I knew I had heard that they told, and I wanted to find it. And I did find it in one of the books that I have. And I like it because I first heard a version of this story from a British musical. And a long time ago, I was in a musical review of things from the 30s, and it had music from all over the United States and from Europe. And the version I heard there just made me laugh like crazy. And then I heard that there were other versions of the same story. And so I searched, and I finally found this one. So here we go. They called this No News. And it was in the South. A certain Southern lady was returning home after recuperating in the mountains for 3 months. Her friend, Georgianne, met her at the railway station. Georgianne, has there been any news while I've been away? Oh, no, there hasn't been any news. Surely something must have occurred in my absence. Why, I've been gone 3 months, and I'm anxious for any little bit of news you may have. Well, now that you mention it, of course, it don't amount to much, but since you've been away, your dog died. My dog died. How did my dog die? He ate some of that burnt horse flesh. Burnt horse flesh? Yeah, after the fire cooled off, he went over and ate some of the burnt horse flesh, and that's what killed the dog. After the fire cooled off? Yeah, see, the barn burned down. My barn burned down? How did my barn burn down? Well, it must have been a spark from the house. Oh, yes, now that's completely burned down. How did my house burn down? See, it was the candles. They kind of all lit up the curtains. Candles, I don't even allow candles in the house. How did candles get in the house? They was set up around the coffin. The coffin? Who died? Now, you needn't worry about that because that's been, since you've been away, your mother-in-law died. My mother-in-law? What a pity. But how did she die? Well, you know, some folks say it was from shock about what she heard, that your husband had run away with the choir leader. But other than that, there ain't been no news. Isn't that something?
Great story.
Yeah, and the version I've used, the version that I've told, that I haven't told it for a long time, but it's about somebody coming home from a trip and checking with the neighbor who was supposed to keep his eye on the house. And he, you know, he said, well, there is some bad news. And, you know, your cat died. Said, oh, that's terrible. Yeah. It is, but, you know, cat got up on a roof and was doing something up there and slid down the roof, fell off, landed on that cement sidewalk, and died. And said, That's terrible. You could have told me that in an easier way. You could have spread it out over a while. I said, first, the cat got sick and getting new shock like that. So, you could have said the cat was sitting in the sun and resting on the, you don't break bad news to a person by saying the cat slid off the roof and died. And he said, well, do you have any other news for me? Let me think now. Your mother was up on the roof fixing the tiles. and it goes on a little bit more, but it's a real quickie thing in between songs in this musical. So anyway, the way the actors did it was very funny. So.
Oh my goodness.
I was thinking about these kind of stories because at the performance by Priscilla Howell on Wednesday night, she told some things that were so just really quick. She said one of the things that was in Bulgaria when she studied there, they often would do 2-minute stories. Sometimes it may be only 90 seconds, and they always had a neat ending, And so, she did tell a couple stories that I had heard versions of, and that I told versions of when I would be in schools and stuff. And she also told a couple stories that she prefaced it with to the audience, because the in-person storytelling is for adults, and people can bring teenagers if they want, or their children if they're willing to have them exposed to possibly something that wouldn't be proper for school. So, and I won't tell what the one she told there, but it is one of the funniest ones I've ever heard in my life. And it was quite entertaining. She had these quickies, and it was a neat thing to see, because the audiences that for most storytelling aren't used to a story being over in 90 seconds.
That's right.
They're usually ready for a buildup, stuff. But the thing was, she did a couple of those stories, and they have a definite ending. Boom. And the way they worked, especially the first two, after she told a couple of them, the audience caught on and were waiting, I guess. But the first one she told, it was da 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 da, and it was dead silence in the opera house for 10 seconds, 12, maybe 15, and then it's incredible laughter, because it took the people, it took, she finished the sentence, and everybody had to think, what? Oh my goodness. and there were some people, there were some shouts from the audience like that. Oh no, oh yeah. stuff. So that was very good. I think that was incredible. And at the end of her performance, and Adam, when he was asking some questions of her, that's what we do on Wednesdays on After the Stories now. He mentioned her that was he couldn't ever remember having been with any storyteller whose stories range from 90 seconds to 90 minutes. So, and it was fun. People did enjoy it.
Wow. Well, yeah. I am struggling with how I'm going to cope with having two speak nights every month, because I know I can't make both of them. So I'm going to have to figure out a plan.
Well, I have a suggestion, but you'd never like my suggestion. So, well, that's not true. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you like my suggestion, but you won't like this one.
But you're going to tell me anyway.
I think so. Whatever thing you have going on either Tuesday or Wednesday that would interfere with speaking if you just quit that.
I don't have anything going on Tuesday evening or Wednesday evening. It's just a lot of time to be away from home and to drive all the way to Shepherdstown.
No, that's true. Yeah, I understand that. I understand that. especially since probably Jose wouldn't be going with you.
Probably.
Right. Not.
That's right.
Right. Okay. And Terry didn't go on Wednesday night.
There you see.
Our serious, definite loves of our lives do not love storytelling as much as we do.
Well, very few people love storytelling as much as you and I do.
Right. So anyway, I had a good time, but I was lonely when I had to drive in the dark.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think our time's up, Mr. Z.
I think it is, and we did a good job today. I think
we did a pretty good job.
Yeah, I have to watch my dad would say, watch that arm, patting yourself on the back, boy.
You've been listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour. I'm Fanny Crawford.
And I'm Star Steelkowski.
And we're broadcasting from Bolivar, West Virginia, Hagerstown, Maryland, and Martinsburg, West Virginia. You can find us at talltales.enlightenradio.org if you want to hear more and more and more, probably too much. But we're glad you joined us, and we're signing off. As soon as you tell us, John, station manager, what's coming up next?
Well, I'm going to continue playing Boney James, a Trinidad smooth jazz host.